Blog Talk Radio.
Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Good morning, y'all. Good morning to you. We all in our places with our bright, shining faces. And this is a day to start a new day. How y'all doing this morning? It was nice. Big old moon out there, y'all. That moon was out there. Whoa. Rose in Harlem, as Marie as Aretha would say, and you know, the Nevers brother had a song out about the moon. You know, they from New Orleans. But I thought about it. Look out your windows if y'all hope you're in Chicago. I guess in the country, the moon would be, in daytime you see it, it's a full moon. It used to be when it was a full moon, and the police officers, they would make sure they put more police officers on duty. They put more folks in the psych ward to watch out, and more crime. People, because, you know, the moon control your 90%, you know, your body's water, so it can kind of control you a little bit. But the moon looked nice. I guess all the witches out there today, ooh, hollering at the moon. So y'all better get prayer for y'all, because you know they're out there. Okay, last day of Black History Month. I left my darn headphones, so I'm trying to use these headphones. I don't like to use other folks, so I'm going to see what I can do. But I left them at home. I don't know why I left them. Maybe I left them here last week. I'm excited. But it's the last day of Black History Month. So we got something special for you so you can tell everybody. And we're going to play a very good interview on Dr. King. Not in preaching, but an interview. So you can get an idea of what we was about. Because, see, a lot of these children really don't know who and what Dr. King was. I saw the Black History Celebration put on by the children at the Harold Washington Culture Center day before. I think it was the 24th. Was it the day? It might have been Thursday I saw it, Thursday or Wednesday. Wednesday. It was really great, and those who missed it should go back to the Harold Washington Culture Center site and look at it. And, in fact, a lot of our stuff is on there. Y'all should see. And when you look and you see it, know that those children did all the research with the intro. My granddaughter, I was shocked. You know, she loved the arts and stuff. But my other granddaughter, Dorothy Eileen, did the intro. I didn't know she had put that together like that, but it was so nice. Her name Dorothy, too, but she's Darlene. And then the other children did the research. And so you might have got a chance to see that intergenerational thing about history, not just, you know, we try to pull it together and see how you look back and how they was doing and bring it. And I was just so happy about Blair. She owned that song, Mama May Have, Papa May Have. Baby, we're going to record her at the Harold Washington and release that song, because this girl, I said, she took ownership of that song, baby. So make sure that you look at it and you see that we're bringing those children out of their shells. And what we have is that's the group right now that we are training to become leaders. They're going to be coaches and leaders in our summer program as they go. And they're young, and we're teaching them right now to do different stuff, because they're going to be over another group of children. What we tried to do is make sure that we work with our children. And it was really something. It gave them a lot of positive stuff. It gave them a lot of stuff they didn't know, like the interview with Dr. McCray, who's out in California. He's a surgeon. And he talked about it. It was really good. Look at the interview. He also talked about his invention that he invented. We didn't get a chance to get into that much. But, Dorothy Jean interviewed her, I think. Him, interviewed him. But the children, to see them interact with the, you know, the we did the intergenerational, because we got to. We got to show both. And what I thought was really good about it was that it showed, okay, you got this, but look at this. And to really show and to uplift, because what happened today is that too many, all our children hear is negative stuff. You know, all night long you're hearing the sirens. And then you turn on the TV, you're hearing the shooting by what's shooting. Like the shootings are up on the expressway, by the way, which we'll talk about later, up 300-some%. Or they hear negative stuff, and the only thing they see people fighting for is crime. Crime this. We got to make sure that we do this. And everything that they do for our community is based off of something that's bad, some crime, somebody don't kill somebody. And that's enough to make children feel bad. Oh, well, yeah, we're going to do the social justice program, or we're going to make sure that we do the bail program. And this is really a thing that's killing our children, and I don't think that you know that it's doing that, because you're too busy being scared and say, are we going to sign this bill to make the no bail? Well, if you got children in jail or you have some problem with it, I can see why you want it, but you haven't looked at the consequence of what that's going to be. But nobody's saying we're going to fight for the children to have the right to be a thorough thinker, to be able to make something, to be something, to believe. Like this little black boy, the young man that was in the program did, hey, black child, I was so happy to see him come out of his shell. Do you know who you are? And it was just really a great thing to hear him say that, because if you knew who he was and how we bring him out of his shell, he's getting prepared to be one of our leaders for the summer. We know, we're not saying, do you know who you are? Do you know who you really are, that you can be what you want to be, how you want to be, or to look at one of the interviews from Dr. McCray, or to we even look at Adam Clayton Powell to hear what he had to say, to hear his voice, or Earl Gray, who's over the Black Enterprise, who founded Black Enterprise, or to hear someone talk about John Johnson. They had another kind of thing other than, oh, we got to do this. We got to get our boys out of jail. Now, listen to me. When I was alderman, I don't put all that stuff together. One of the things I did was I visited all of the prisons. That's why you hear some of my brothers talking now. I visited the prisons. I talked to the brothers. I said, we need you. Come home. So I'm not knocking what we're in. I took a lot of them brothers who was going into a life of crime when I got in. I kind of helped them get on their feet, and I see them today, and they're doing stuff, owning their businesses and stuff. So I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. But is this all we got to, our children got to hear about? Oh, yeah, we signing this bill. We doing this. And it's all about crime. It's all about bringing them down. It has nothing to do with lifting our children up. And I submit to you that is strategic between the hate and the crime and the keeping our children down. Not that we don't supposed to deal with stuff. Be clear on that. When I was an alderman, I had a shelter, the Washington King Resource Center, where we took in the men and we really worked with them and helped them get jobs and stuff. We did a lot of stuff to work with our people, but we lifted up and took our children on retreats, and we did all kind of things with our children, brought people to talk to them and stuff. So we have got to do something else, because you're telling your children you're nothing. All you are, you might get shot when you go out to do this. You can't think thoroughly. You know, you're even taking away a black woman. So all it's like they're not really allowing you to be the woman, because while they're doing all that, you got a group of people. Look, I tell you, we all got somebody who might be doing whatever they want to do in our family. They might be, you know, I don't know what all we call. I don't want to say the wrong name, the gays, whatever. We all got some in our families. And that's always been around. You know, we knew, we have friends, family, and we never went through all this stuff. But all of a sudden, then you got a group that say they're passing a bill in terms of education. Is it dealing with your child's math? Is it dealing with your child's language and English so they can participate in the world economy? So they can participate in having a discussion or feeling good about themselves. Are we teaching them science? Are we teaching them the artisan trades? Like right now, how many of our companies, black companies, on their way to Texas to help with the Texas going to need a lot of plumbers? Are we teaching them that you can make a lot of money being a plumber, being an electrician, being all that stuff? Are we teaching them, or while we talking about these unions and phone ringing out, while we talking, hold on, y'all, she's going to answer y'all. But I know y'all... She just hold on to everything, doing it all over there. But you know, we teaching all these union talking stuff. How many folks are putting our children in the trades? How many? And these other folks, as I study and read, are steadily talking about contracts while they got us over here, people of color doing this, doing that. Or they got us just saying that stuff, and they just running away with the money. And at the same time, money being handed out. Like I told you last week about J.P. Morgan Chase got a $500 billion thing they're going to give out, and they're giving $200 million. To Melody Hopkins to pass out, but y'all thought that was a lot of money. But when J.P. Morgan Chase, whole essence is based off of enslavement of black people, and that's what they're doing, giving us bull. But if they keep us over there doing that, and we're not looking at the fact that it was a report came out that our children was behind everybody in math. They was behind our people, the other people of color, the Hispanics, the Asian, all of them, the whites. The black child was behind in math. They was behind in English. They was behind and science, all of those things, because we want folks to just give us feel-good stuff. Oh, I feel good about that. Oh, no. Oh, look at that. So they do the bling-bling. They do the bling-bling, and they do the feel-good stuff. That's what they do, the bling-bling, the feel-good stuff, and you buy into that. But in the meantime, we got another generation. We already went through. Just look how many kids have graduated already. When you want these kids out here, taking calls, doing this, disrespecting their parents, not, you know, you were to the teaching the children about, yes, ma'am, to respect a black woman or the grandmama, the mama. We teaching them, no, we got to be gender neutral. Mr. Potato Head can't be saying Mr. Potato Head no more. My children love Mr. Potato Head. They build like Mr. Potato Head because it got to be gender neutral. A small group of folks will put all of their stuff and values on you. We should be responsible for our own values and teaching our own children our spiritual values, our family values, the values of loving each other. But somebody going to teach that same people tell you, and they'll speak to hate stuff. They still over there holding you down. Or they and you probably going to like this. Every day I turn to me, white male. They love to talk about the white man because they think you're going to get excited about that. But you got to be clear. It's not just the white males. It's men, period. But they know that black folks have helped them lead the fight about the white male. But what they have not told you is that the white female is just as vicious or more so than anything else. Not all. They're the ones. It was a white woman that got Emmett Till lynched, got thrown in the lake. It was white women that got black men lynched. But said, oh, he looked at me. It was a white woman that started the riot in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that tore up Black Wall Street. So it's not a matter whether it's a male or a female, a man or a woman. It's a matter of the injustice that they do. But they'll get you to just look over there, and you join it in this mess. You do not hear these people talk about family, church. You don't hear that. Black people in this country, in the world, really, because in the other parts, if you travel to the diaspora, they still have the family thing tight. Don't fool yourself. But in this country, if we're to survive, we have to make sure that we keep family together, we keep God in our presence. I'm not trying to put anybody down what their sexual preference, because I think you're not supposed to look at nobody's door, keyhole. But is there the right to take everything that they have come up with, legislatively, for LGBT, this and that, all, and I'm not knocking whatever they want to do, but that is not a race. That's a sexual orientation. Sex is not a race. That's, you know, I was looking at something the other day, and some of y'all are going to get upset. I've got to find it, but it's not on one of them stations y'all going to see. I'm not knocking the Health and Human Service person they put there. She's a transgender. That's who she is. I don't care. You know, that's her. But Senator Rand Paul asked her, do you think it's right to take a child and give them some pills to alter their genders when they're young? The pituitary, their growth hormones, make sure that you change the different stuff in their bodies to make them be other. And she wouldn't answer. He said, no, let me go back. Do a child know what they sexual, why they sexually feel? You think it's right to change their sex stuff while they're young? On their own without talking to their parents? And I tell you this, they would have changed minds when I was young. And I ain't have no feelings for no woman. I have 5 children, 8 grand. 3 great grands. Just think if they'd done it to me, y'all wouldn't have had me. Because my brother James Jr., he listening too. He knew I would shoot marbles with him because it was just the two of us growing up before mama had other children. I cat eye mom. My brother used to have a big water bucket of marbles. And I'd be with my brother while we shoot them marbles. I shot marbles. I climbed trees. I jumped fence. I played ball. Because I was like that. And they called me a tomboy. They didn't say I need a restructure of my gender. But that's all we hear now. We're not hearing anything about this is what you need to do. And our leadership, who's governing us, who we put in place, that's why I'm playing this last tape of Dr. King. And it's very important y'all wake people up today how to hear this on the last day of Black History. But, you know, if we need to say, no, wait a minute. You remember it was a small group of people. It wasn't a whole lot of folks who went and took prayer out of the schools. And once they took prayer out of the school went crazy. Just being quiet for a moment. Just quiet, whatever you are spiritually. But to say, no, you can't do that. It was only a handful of folks who did that. Now it's a handful of folks. There's a handful of folks who now putting everything, our whole curriculum, our whole everything now, everything they have done to change, and you better look at the Illinois education thing I've been changed, is based off of sex. And they have nothing to do with education. Nothing whatsoever. And you got children who are functionally illiterate. And y'all I'm not blaming all of you. Got some good teachers, but a lot of them have left the system. These folks are not going back. They're not in school. I'm calling black folks, y'all should put yourself together and begin to open up small schools and help these children. You better do that. Because these folks, hey, give me some of my tax dollars back if you're not going to go back. Because our children are suffering. But they still passing bills, and it's all based off of LGBT sexual orientation and immigration. The only thing you're getting out of anything is immigration. Now, what you have, and I have a lot of friends who, I have a diaspora friends. I have other folks since Biden been in there, and open up the border. Now, y'all don't see that on MSNBC and CNN. Y'all better Google this stuff. These folks are coming thousands and thousands by the day, and they bring children, busloads, dropping them off. But those children are going to get educated and get everything they need. Your children are not going to have nothing because they have a cohesiveness that you don't have. Now, I got a lot of stuff going on here. I just want to tell y'all, this is the last day of Black History. It should never be. It's the last day that the country celebrated, but Black History is every day for us. But when you're going to look at all this stuff, the sadness is we sitting quietly back. And, you know, it's because of post-trauma slavery syndrome that black folks be quiet. Because we have not gotten past, you better shut up or they get you. Shut up. They going to get you next. And then you got leadership who's supposed to be leading you. Half of them scared, too. They scared they're going to get canceled out or they done got something for theirs. And most of your teachers and your leaders, children, do not go to Chicago public schools. Be clear on that. And that's the rule that should be why they canceling our folks, is that if your child can't, you can't work in school, this soup ain't good enough for you to eat, then don't feed it to my child. They haven't said all children got to have music. They haven't said that. That's our music. Black history is our music. Oh, y'all, I see y'all calling. I know we're gonna be all right here. Black history is our music. I was driving around the other day, had my grandchild in the car. I said, she was listening to all I was listening to series, and then I go from there to be going through. But she was listening to the music, and all them different singers came right behind the others. And I told her, I said, you see, we just did songs, but now we're not in control of that either. So that's the whole thing. As we celebrate Black History, if we don't educate our children and we don't get them a spiritual thing, then what is it all about, huh, Alfie? What's it about? You got another group of people leading your children, leading your people. And they give a little sum. And so what's going to happen, when all this stuff comes down, everybody's going to have a place on a table but you. You're going to have nothing to offer as when you have a seat at the table of human brotherhood. What are you offering and what are you doing? I think of a group of people that do not fight on behalf of their children is a group of people that's going to be extinct. If they extinct the Indians, they're going to be... Look, and I'm talking about the descendants of enslaved blacks in America now. I'm not talking about the whole... Now, and when you talk about the immigration, they're not talking about bringing no immigrants from the diaspora, from black countries. You got to be clear on that. That immigration stuff is coming from India and from the from our border. And they coming, baby. Oh, y'all ain't looking because they're not showing it to you. They got caravans. They running in here. They got everything. They getting their shots first, and they doing this and going to the schools. And it's really a mess. Now, I got to take a break in a second. But I'm going to try to do this real quick because when I come back, I'm going to do Dr. King on the other end. Now, you know Robin Kelly, Michelle Harris, and Michelle Harris, and Robin Kelly, Michelle Harris, and this woman Castro trying to get the seat, the Democratic chair. They said Michelle got most of the numbers. But it was interesting because as much as Jesus Garcia, congressman, His whole being is because of the black community. He automatically threw his support behind Christina Castro. Well, I'm not knocking that because he's being very nationalistic. But now, which goes back to the same thing they did in California. They didn't put no black woman in there. They play when they want to. And Chewy whole being, he, I know Chewy very well, is based off the black struggle. Well, before, he says to Harold Washington, he was the manager for Rudy Lozano when Rudy Lozano got killed. But the reason he's in Congress is because of Gutierrez. The reason Gutierrez was in Congress because he got to be an alderman. When Harold said, go over there in that ward and give me Gutierrez because I need him for the numbers. And we went over and we fought hard for Gutierrez. In fact, I lost the captain behind that. We was up against some stuff. And we made sure that 90% of those black folks came, those black folks, because he was in a runoff. And Harold said, tell me you get over there. Take your organization over there, and y'all bring me Gutierrez. And you can go search it if you want to. Because they did an article. They said, with all of the people that Daley and Mail and all of them had, that we brought our little band from the Third Ward Democratic Organization and took that seat for Harold Washington. And when Harold died, Gutierrez switched. But it had not been for the black folks in that ward coming out, Mellon would have had that seat. And as a result, he went on to Congress, and now you got Chewy. But he did not say anything about progressive. He didn't say no coalition. He automatically went with his Latina woman, which is all right. Look, I don't knock people for looking for their own. My problem is that our people don't do that. We don't try to do that. We don't know how to be nationalistic. I'm not saying just put anybody something because of their color, but because they look like me, but make sure they're all right. But we don't do that. He didn't have to think a thing. And now he's not thinking that he's in office because of black people. And that's what happens to us all the time. But I want y'all to look that up. He didn't think twice. And then the other thing, see, the Latina community is very vocal. They understand government. We don't. Alderman Russell, Carlos Russell, was into it with Lightfoot, and Lightfoot said a bad word when he was talking about him, F it, or some stuff. She said, "Why?" She apologized real quick, said, "Oh, I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about something else." But he was saying, we have black Puerto Rican that's being discriminated against in the Latina community. But that's just something. And then the Chicago distance of the, they said Chicago got an F in the schools. And then the other thing that was in the paper the other day in the Sun-Times was that demolition fees are planned to preserve affordable housing in Pilsen. They put together and say, you got to do gentrification? This is what we're going to do for you. That's government. That's what the representative did over there. Carlos Russell, they did it over there. They said, no. If you want to come over here, then that's what you're going to do. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. That's government. That's not politics. And they're governing for their people. Also in the Tribune, I was reading this girl, Glanton, and I'll deal with that later, because she was talking about black history, and I really want to get into that because I think she got a misunderstanding about what we need to be doing. She ended her statement by saying African Americans in the country would benefit more if we use the month of February to focus on improving the present rather than looking back at the past. She didn't only look back to look forward. That sounds like the old folks don't talk about slavery. But in this, she is deeper than that. But I'm going to have time to go over this. It was in the Tribune this week. Her name was Darlene Glanton. I didn't like the article. And the other thing is, I'm going to send Laura Lightfoot and some other folks a letter on this about, and then I'm going to take a break, about this whole thing about tearing down Lincoln's statue. I want to know who is it saying tear down. What group is leading that? Why would you want to tear down Lincoln? Lincoln, regardless why he did it, he freed the slaves, the enslaved people, because we were not slaves, we were enslaved. Yeah, he did that after negotiating with Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass. That's what government's about. At least he did it. You got folks right here that we can't get to do nothing. And then you go, they say, tear down Lincoln, tear down Grant. That's tearing down your history. without even understanding. I don't care if Grant did marry or had her. All these folks in this country had slaves. But we have to talk to our children. But there's other people outside of our community that's getting our people to say tear down, because then you're going to tear down and destroy black history too, so that we don't have ownership of this country. As I told you last week, the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which guaranteed protection for all U.S. citizens regardless of color to make and enforce contracts to sue the partisans, that he did that. Granted, there's too much to read. He got rid of the legislation. He did this legislation to overturn the Black Code. This is Grant. Now, you need to, Frederick Douglass was a very good fan of Grant. He said something about how good Grant was. But that's going to your government for redress. So if they get, you know, come on, y'all. He established and formed Confederate states that had been used. That was in the Federal State, got rid of the Black Code. The Reconstruction Act of 1867, which split 10 former Confederate states, including Tennessee, into 5 military districts to be overseen by the U.S. military. It mandated each state rewrite its state constitution to allow for black men, voting rights before readmitting to the Union. So they had to do that. That's why in South Carolina, all of them, you had black folks, senators, and all them folks in office. The 14th Amendment, 1868, established the concept of birthright, which for us, which all these folks are using now, to become citizens. Anyone born in the United States boundaries or territory subject to the jurisdiction of U.S. laws was automatically a U.S. citizen. Okay? He did the equal protection of the law. Grant won the 1868 presidential election by landslide because black folks voted for him by 300,000 ballots. Because of what he had done. Grant victory came primarily because of the black votes in the South. That's where he had all them people out there, the men who was voting, who overwhelmingly voted for him in the Republican Party during the election. After he took office, Grant hoped to build upon his established framework by championing the 15th Amendment to enhance, protect, and guarantee black males voting rights nationwide. He also supported a series of legislation acts in 1871 to improve the federal government ability to stop acts of racial terrorism committed by Ku Klux Klan. Ku Klux Klan was committed by the Democrats. In 1875, he signed the civil rights law that outlawed racial discrimination in public transportation and accommodation, and he barred black exclusion from jury service. I'm saying these folks, tear down Grant. And you don't even, because you don't know your history. As that girl said, don't look at the past. If you don't know your history, anybody can lead you anywhere. So when Frederick Douglass, when he took over, Lincoln got assassinated, he took the seat, he furthered doing what he further did what Lincoln said he was going to do. So I'm saying we have to get, hey, y'all, we got to get control of ourselves here. We got to take control of our narrative. We got to take control of what we talk about. We got to have some more Earl Grays and John Johnson and Mr. Gardner's and S.B. Fuller and all these folks. We got to get our children knowing what they can do other than that, but we also got to teach them our history. I said leave them up and go teach. But I want to know, who is this group that got y'all thinking about 10 outside? I told, come on, Lori, man, like, why are you worried about some doing statue? If you're on the, but hey, tear down and do the LGBT. Tear down and do the LGBT. That's what you do. And do all the other stuff. Put all these other things in place. Don't talk about the money. Yesterday, he gave some money out yesterday for the Bill, Illinois. How much we getting? Let's talk about, other folks talk about government. We talk about politics, and we being used. Yes. That's why you don't have a black senator in California. Because they didn't coalesce and make sure we had a black woman. Carol Moseley Bronze, who we fought and put that, she wrote the Code of a Negro here. Then white women turned to her, and she lost her seat. The only people that she was stuck with was black people. But you don't know that. Because hate, all they got to do is keep you hating, and that's it. Talk of Chicago, 69 WON. Tell everybody to wake up, because I'm going to do Dr. King today now. Talk of Chicago, 69 WON. 773-591-6900. We're streaming live. www.thepavilion.com. We're on iHeartRadio. Take us wherever you go. We're on Facebook, a group Facebook. We're also on Blog Talk and everything else, iHeartRadio. Get your coffee, get your tea. Dorothy Wright Tillman, coffee, tea, conversation with me. And I'll be right back. Tell everybody we got Dr. King coming up on the other side. Well, he's going to wind up our civil rights. Okay, I'll be right back.
Of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Hello, I'm Jason Roberts, owner of Advantage Toyota of River Oaks, and we are your community dealer. We want to thank you for your support this past year. Now, in 2021, we're making it easy for you to get a great deal on a new Toyota with four easy steps. Go online, choose your vehicle, personalize your payment, value your trade, then apply for financing. Then come on in and drive home in your new Toyota. Like a 2021 Toyota RAV4, lease it for only $219 per month for 36 months. With $27.99 due at signing. Plus, at Advantage Toyota, we want and need your trade-in. Even if you don't buy from us, we will still make you an aggressive offer. This is Jason Roberts, and I'll see you at Advantage Toyota. You can visit us online at AdvantageToyotaRiverOaks.com.
I'm Dr. Andrea Russo, a cardiologist. Maybe you're waiting to talk to your doctor right now. But if you're having an irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness, don't wait. This could be a serious condition like atrial fibrillation, which can make you about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. If you're having these symptoms, don't wait. Talk to a doctor by phone, online, or in person.
Brought to you by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Tune in to More Than That with Gia Peppers live this Saturday at 10 p.m. or wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode of More Than That is sponsored by Kroger, who is committed to creating communities free of hunger and waste. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're listening to Coffee, Tea, and Dorothy. Tillman, that is, on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Say loud, I'm black and I'm proud, We're back, y'all. I'm going to try to take a few minutes because on the other side, I'm having a few problems with my headphone, but I'll be all right. I can't hear good. I don't know. I'll see you in a minute. I left mine at home. Okay, I'm back. I'm going to see, can I take some calls? Talk of Chicago, 69WON. Streaming live, www.wvon.com. I'm going to take a few calls because on the other side of the break, I'm going to be doing Dr. King for a few minutes, and I'll take some more calls. Frank, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Ms. Tillman. How you doing? And good morning to you.
I'm fine.
Yes, you are. Ms. Tillman, I got to give a shout out to Dorothy Jane Tillman. Been in the news all this week. I'm smiling from ear to ear. Not only am I proud of her and her accomplishment, I'm proud of her family. And she is living proof that everything you're saying today about our kids is 100% right in guarding our kids and educating our kids and not leaving it up to these white teachers. Y'all set her mindset and set her pace, okay? And she picked the ball up and ran with it. She is an example of what's in all of our kids,
and
Ms. Tillman.
And she's working with other children, too. She's working at the leadership camp. They're in the leadership camp, those are the ones that did the Black History.
Exactly.
They're getting ready for the summer to work with other children.
Exactly, like they was each other too. That's what's needed, Ms. Tillman. Ms. Tillman, as long as the vast majority of our teachers are white, their plan is going to be continue to hold our kids back, and then you combine that with the mothers and the fathers not doing their part to say, hey, look, you don't listen to Ms. Potato Head crap. If I buy this package, I'm going to write Ms. Potato Head and Ms. Potato Head on it. We cannot let this society be the main shaper of the minds of our kids, or we're going to stay.
Okay, Frank, thank you. Let me say, Dorothy right now is in Arizona. She's at one of the Indian reservation camps with her science camp. The Apaches, I think that's who it is. They got her because she created a kit to teach the children and stuff, and they bought a bunch of her kits, and they got her out there training their children. She's in Arizona with on Indian reservation today. Thank you,
Ms. Tillman.
You
that exists in all of our kids.
It does.
Real quick, for someone to stand that far ahead of above the pole in the bar, that's not nothing unique. That's letting you know that's in all our kids. If we get a hold of them and not let this country shape their minds and their inspiration and their motivation and hold them back, Ms. Tillman, that's all I want to say.
Okay, thank
Shout
you, Frank.
Shout out to you, Ms. Dorothy Jane Tillman. You're welcome, Ms. Tillman.
She in Arizona right now on the Indian reservation. She out there with those Indian children. Jimmy sent me some pictures back. The important thing, those children love her. She out there teaching them about the science and the kid. They invited her out. There's a lot of schools, you know, after they got through with the Black History celebration the other day, they went on a Zoom call. All the children that you saw on the Black History went on a Zoom call with about 800 other children, and some of them was even at Nancy Jefferson incarcerated. But the children went on a whole Zoom call and talked about 800 children. So it was not just Dorothy, but all of the children that was there. I might try to take one more call, and then I got to go on a break. And on the other side of the break, I'm going to bring Dr. King up, and then I'm going to take calls. But I'm going to try to get Plump before I go. Minister Plump, you got 30 seconds. Hello?
Wait a minute, y'all. Shalom.
30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Wait on y'all, shalom, Ahura. We don't die, we multiply like towers forever.
They multiply by pouring over the border. We can't have that many babies.
Hallelujah.
If we have any babies, right. They coming thank over that God. Border.
Thank God for Dorothy Wright Tillman and WBON. Welcome to Black History Month, Black Wall Street Music, Chicago. February the 28th, 2021, Atonement Day. The Honorable Mayor Harold Washington said, we must plump the whole community.
Uh-huh.
We are plumping it up in Chicago, America, and the world.
Okay.
In peace, love, unity, marketing people.
Thank you so much.
4655 South Martin Luther King Jr. Drive.
Thank you. Okay, Talk of Chicago 1690 WBON, our number 773-591-1690. Streaming live, www.wbon.com. Our Heart Radio, take us wherever you go. We're on Facebook, a group Facebook. I'll get your coffee, get your tea. Come on back and talk to me on the other half. And tell everybody we're coming back with something really deep on Dr. King, what he said we are. You might not have heard this before. Be right back. Is it because I'm black?
Wondering why my dreams never came true.
Chicago is 1690 WBON.
Pittman testified in a House hearing and said police were simply unprepared for the scale of the deadly attack led by a MAGA mob.
The Capitol lockdown was not properly executed. Some of the officers were unsure of when to use lethal force.
The riot prompted the resignations of the Capitol Police Chief and the Sergeants at Arms of the House and Senate.
Former President Trump's tax records were not the only documents handed over to the New York State Prosecutor's Office. According to court documents, Trump's accounting firm will provide the Manhattan District Attorney's Office with any and all statements of financial condition, periodic financial reports, annual statements, and independent auditor's reports. These records will provide hints for investigators on how Trump conducts business, as well as how the reported tax numbers were calculated. Experts say this information is key to providing criminal intent, such as insurance and tax fraud, or falsifying of business records. The United States Supreme Court rejected Trump's last-ditch appeal to keep the records under wraps.
Supporters of an African-American Oklahoma death row inmate are stepping up their calls for his life to be spared. The Black Information Network's Mike Island picks up the story from here.
A petition with over 6 million signatures was delivered to the Oklahoma Parole Board offices calling for the release of Julius Jones. Jones was 22 years old when he was convicted of murder and sentenced to death in 2002. Jones says he's innocent, and advocates say the DNA evidence used against him in court does not meet law enforcement standards for a positive match. The Oklahoma Legislative Black Caucus has even come out in support of Jones, issuing a statement calling on the governor to grant clemency. I'm Mike Island on the Black Information Network.
A massacre around a monumental church in the Tigray region may constitute a crime against humanity. A new report by the human rights group Amnesty International says Eritrean and Ethiopian soldiers committed the crime after systematically slaughtering over 800 civilians in Aksum near the Church of St. Mary. It happened last November as the soldiers were searching for fighters with the Tigray People's Liberation Front. According to the United Nations, a crime against humanity is a widespread systematic attack directed against any civilian population. Ethiopia's leadership continues to deny their involvement in the attack.
Black police officers in the Chicago, Illinois Police Department are stepping up to mend the gap between law enforcement and communities of color. They're forming the Black Public Safety Alliance with the hopes of balancing what they consider a divisive message coming from predominantly white police unions, like the Fraternal Order of Police. The new group currently consists of 25 members. I'm Jaleesa Chapman with Ray Harris on the Black Information Network.
At Chicago's banks, it's an honor to serve more than 170 communities from Pullman, Hyde Park and North Lawndale to Markham, Maywood and South Holland. At Wintrust, serving everyone is our responsibility. As we recognize Black History Month, we acknowledge the past. But we also strengthen our commitment to supporting and investing in the Black community because Black communities create Black history. Visit wintrust.com/blackhistory. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Different voices, one goal. Join us in protecting our communities from COVID-19.
It's not the critic who counts.
So let us not be petty when our cause is great.
We reject fatalism or cynicism when it comes to human affairs.
We open our hearts and our homes to one another as one American family.
We are the change that we seek.
Sponsored by the Illinois Broadcasters Association and the Radio Broadcasters of Chicagoland.
Black History Month is 360 degrees of blackness. Celebrate.
Walmart is committed to the communities it serves through education, opportunity, and celebration. And our campaign to honor Black history. We have committed $1 million over 5 years through Walmart.org's Center for Racial Equity. And we are proud to join WVON asking Chicagoans to make this a year-round observance.
Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON. Hashtag Dorothy Tillman on 1690, the talk of Chicago.
I'll rejoice.
the dark past has taught us. Steve song full of the hope that the present has brought.
Difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind.
Yeah, we got some difficult days. We didn't know how difficult the days was. That was Dr. King tell you, but he's going to tell you in his own words. After I'm talking, right? Dr. King will tell you in his own words in a few minutes when we get past this. It's 7 o'clock wherever you are in the country, in the state, in the city, in the world. To take a deep breath because it is black time. This is the last day that the country celebrates black history. Black history for us is every day. Take a deep breath, y'all. We're doing Trinity. Black, 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 black. To the bone, to the brain. What they said about Tiger Woods, they said he was strong. His mind is strong. That's going to heal him because God is in the mind, y'all. Black, 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 black. One more time, y'all. Black, 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 black. Is that black enough for you?
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie once.
Yeah, they told a lie. And they still tell it, Dr. King.
They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. Ha! But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
I'm black and I'm beautiful. Oh, my God. Isn't this wonderful, y'all? I'm proud of it. I'm black, and I'm beautiful. That's Dr. King, y'all. And y'all better tell folks I'm finna play some deep stuff for them. I ain't gonna talk too long. That's why I kind of abbreviated what I talked about. And let me correct something. Y'all, please forgive me. I didn't know no better. I remember the song, "And the Only Place to Be on the Indian Reservation." Remember that song? And the band played on. And my daughter texted me and corrected me and said, thank you, Dorothy Jean, for correcting me. They're Native American children that she's with. And they love her to death. She have kits and stuff. She done put kits over there at Nancy Jefferson in the Audie home so they can learn signs. She got a Leo school, bought a bunch of the kits for their children. A lot of the Catholic school is still in, bought some kits for their children that she created, science kits. So, Dorothy Jean, I'm glad you're up and listening. I'm sorry. I apologize. I will say Native American. We're back, y'all, and I'm not going to talk long because I want to play Dr. King. And I'm going to tell y'all about what's going on with our pastor, Emeritus Jackson, and I'll tell you about that at the end. Okay? Now, I was looking at the Malcolm X piece, which I'll go into next week. I'm so glad that the minister, as I talked to Professor Small in New York after this whole thing came out about Malcolm, James Small, and he said, because, you know, he was real close to Malcolm, he said, you know, Sister Tillman, I'm so glad that we're still alive and the minister's still alive when this truth came out. But we'll deal with that next week, not this week. So I was looking and just decided to check me some Malcolm out, because I knew Malcolm. And this video popped up, when this popped up of Dr. King, then I said, no, this is something I want to end my show with. And then I'm gonna give a link on my Facebook at the end of the show. This is Dr. King's last interview, and it's very important that y'all listen to him. Just listen to him very deeply, what he got to say. This is Dr. King interview about where we're going. This is 11 months before he was assassinated. Dr. King, my teacher, my leader, the man that I love that was assassinated, that gave his life for us and not for all this mess. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Dr. King, this church is as good a place as any to go back over your commitment.
This was an interview that he did with the NBC. First time it was live. Did you start it back from the beginning?
And then you went to Montgomery, Alabama, and started.
Start back from the beginning. This was an interview that he did with NBC live, and it was in color, one of the few colors. And I want you to listen to it, and then I'm going to give you a link later to look at, and it's going to kind of, you know, but just listen right now, okay?
This church is as good a place as any to go back over your commitment to the civil rights movement. When you went out from here into university, and then you went to Montgomery, Alabama, and started the bus boycotts there, what was the philosophy of the civil rights movement as you saw it then, more than 10 years ago?
Well, I would say then the philosophy was that we must go all out to use legal and nonviolent methods to gain full citizenship rights for the Negro people of our country. Of course, that particular struggle and that philosophy centered on breaking down all of the barriers of legal segregation. So I would say that in that period, the basic thrust for the gaining of citizenship rights for Negroes was to end the humiliation surrounding the whole system of legal segregation.
Dr. King, was there something peculiar to the place where you started and the kind of people you attracted? I mean by that, there was a strong attachment on the part of your parishioners in Montgomery to the church. They were older people, weren't they?
Yes, I would say by and large they were older people who participated in the boycott because they were the ones using the bus more than anybody else. And Montgomery was a community predominantly church-centered. So that it was very easy to get to the vast majority of Negroes because they were in some way connected with a church in the community.
Sir, in addition to your commitment to the idea of nonviolence, wasn't it also the only thing you could do, the white community having the monopoly on violence, that if you had tried violence, they would have met it with violence? it was the only device open to you, wasn't it?
Well, I'll put it another way, that morally, I was led to nonviolence because I felt that it was the best moral way to deal with the problem. We were seeking to establish a just society. And it was my feeling then, and it is my feeling now, that violence is certainly much more socially destructive, and it creates many more social problems than it solves. So I was led to nonviolence for deep moral reasons. Now, there is no doubt about the fact that in our struggle in Montgomery and all over the United States, for that matter, nonviolence is also practically sound. It would just be impractical for the Negro to turn to violence. He has neither the instruments nor the techniques of violence. We are about 10 or 11% of the total population of the nation, and I would say we are about 0.1% of the firepower. So it would just be totally impractical and unwise and unrealistic for the Negro to think of violence. Well, I saw this in the beginning in Montgomery, but this wasn't the basic reason that I turned to nonviolence and that I believed in it as a philosophy. I turned to it because I felt that it was the morally excellent way to deal with the problem of racial injustice in our country.
Is there something about nonviolence that made it, and I use that in the past tense, that made it more useful among Southern Negroes than the ghetto Negroes of the North?
I wouldn't say there's anything that makes it more useful to Southern Negroes. I think it is true that we've had more nonviolent movements in the South because the problem for many years was more crystallized and, in a sense, more visible in the South. We didn't have many civil rights activities on a massive scale in the North until 3 or 4 years ago. So I would say that we just haven't had a chance to experiment on a broad scale with nonviolence in the northern ghetto. I have the feeling that nonviolence is as applicable and workable in the northern ghetto as it is in the South. Now, there's a larger job there. The frustrations at points are much deeper. The bitterness is deeper. And I think that's because in the South we can see pockets of progress here and there. We've really made some strides that are very visible, and every Southern Negro knows that he can do things today that he couldn't do 4 or 5 years ago. Where in the North, the Negro sees only retrogress, and he doesn't find it as easy to get his vision centered on his target, the target of opposition, as he does in the South. Consequently, this is made for despair and at many points cynicism, a feeling that you can't win. And it simply means that we've got to develop in the North a massive job of organization and mobilizing forces and resources to deal with the problem in the urban ghettos of the North, just as we've done it in the South.
In the South, particularly in Alabama, you had visible villains, Jim Clark, Bull Connor, cattle prods, police dogs. But in the North, you don't have those visible villains. Isn't it hard to get your people aroused and directed at something that isn't visible?
Well, that's exactly right. And this is what I was saying when I said it's harder to see your target. In the South, in the nonviolent movement, we were aided always, on the whole, by the brutality of our opponent. It isn't the same way in the North. The other thing is that you don't have legal segregation in the North as you do in the South. So it is much more difficult to get people to see exactly what you're doing, but it isn't an impossible job. It's a hard, it's a tedious job at times to get people to be aroused from their apathetic slumbers, but I still feel that Negroes in the North can be motivated just as they were motivated in the South. And I think as time goes on with the growing economic deprivation in the Negro community, it will even be easier because people will come to see that not only is something wrong in general, but something is wrong in particular in their own economic and housing situations.
Well, what is it? I mean, how do you find it? It's very subtle in the North, is it not?
It's subtle, but it's becoming much more visible. Anybody can see that the schools are more segregated in the North today than they were in 1954 when the Supreme Court rendered its decision declaring segregation unconstitutional. Anybody can look around the ghetto and see that ghetto schools are predominantly segregated and devoid of quality. Anyone who moves through a major ghetto of our country will see the housing conditions. People don't have to be reminded that they are forced to live in slums in many instances, and they're often rat-infested, vermin-filled slums. And it isn't too hard to see the exploitation that the Negro confronts in the ghetto, where he is forced to pay more for less and constantly trying to make ends meet, but because of either no job as a result of unemployment, a job that is so economically unprofitable that the person can't make ends meet. And I think they see all of these things, and more they are coming to see them, because before, the people of the North were looking to the South and they supported the struggles of the South. Now they are coming to see that their problems are very real and they've got organized to grapple with them.
Was there something hypocritical about the fact that the South existed and the North could point the finger? And then when the Civil Rights Acts were passed in the early 60s, you couldn't point the finger anymore?
Well, there was no doubt about the hypocrisy of large segments of the nation on the whole question of racial equality. I think the best example is that many of the senators from the North and the West, and congressmen generally, who voted for civil rights legislation in 64 and even 65 with the Voting Rights Bill, refused last year to vote for civil rights legislation because it dealt with an issue applicable to the North, the whole housing question. And this, it seems to me, was the greatest expression of the hypocrisy of many of our citizens and many of the senators and congressmen of the North.
But isn't that part of the dilemma now? That people knew that Negroes were being denied what was guaranteed to them by the Constitution, by the fact that they were citizens of this country. Then when they were given those rights, do you feel the white community said, well, we've given them all that we have, now it's up to them?
Well, I think the dilemma is much deeper, and I think one during this period of transition has to be very honest with America. And honesty impels me to admit that America has broad racist elements still alive. Racism is still existing in American society, in many areas of the society, North and South. And the other thing is that there has never been a single, solid, determined commitment of large segments of white America on the whole question of racial equality. I think we have to see that vacillation has always existed, ambivalence has always existed, and this to me is the so-called white backlash. It's merely a new name for an old phenomenon. I see the white backlash as a continuation of the same ambivalence and vacillation of white America on the whole question of racial justice that has existed since the founding of our nation. I think the other thing that we must see at this time is that many of the people who supported us in Selma, in Birmingham, were really outraged about the extremist behavior toward Negroes. But they were not at that moment, and they are not now, committed to genuine equality for Negroes. It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee an annual income, for instance, to get rid of poverty for Negroes and all poor people. It's much easier to integrate a bus than it is to make genuine integration a reality and quality education a reality in our schools. It's much easier to integrate even a public park than it is to get rid of slums. And I think we are in a new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
Well, it depends on the level that we are talking here, because I think you have to make a distinction between the people who are genuinely and absolutely committed in the white community on the question of racial equality. And I must confess that I think they're in a very small minority. I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality, and they're always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
But why are they looking for the excuse? What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
That's a part of it, and growing, that grows out of something else. You can't thingify anything without depersonalizing that something. If you use something as a means to an end, at that moment you make it a thing and you depersonalize it. The fact is that the Negro was a slave in this country for 244 years. That was a willful thing that was done. The Negro was brought here in chains, treated in very inhuman fashion, and this led to the thingification of the Negro. So he was not looked upon as a person. He was not looked upon as a human being with the same status and worth as other human beings. And the other thing is that human beings cannot continue to do wrong without eventually rationalizing that wrong. So slavery was justified morally, biologically, theoretically, scientifically, everything else. And it seems to me that white America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma, and that can never be overlooked. So I think these things are absolutely necessary. The other thing is that America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base, and yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, they don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps, but it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
Apart from wanting to live better, which all of us want to do, to raise one's children in a better way, to be better, does the Negro in America know what he wants to be?
I'm convinced that almost every Negro in this country, other than those who have been so scarred by the system that they've become pathological in the process, and we all have to battle with pathology. Nobody really knows what it means to be a Negro unless one can really experience it. And I know we all have to battle with this constant drain of a feeling of nobodiness. But in spite of this, I think the vast majority of Negroes in this country know that they want to be people, they want to be men. They want equality, period. It just boils down to that. And we haven't been able to be people. We haven't been men because of all of the conditions that we've lived with and the syndrome of deprivation surrounding conditions, whether it's in housing, in the economic area, or in schools, or in the vicious credit practices that we face in the ghetto, and all of the problems of closed doors and constant defeats. But in spite of all this, I think we all know, basically, that we want to be men. We want to be persons judged not on the basis of the color of our skin, but on the basis of the content of our character.
But you know that many young Negroes don't want anything that smacks of the American white middle class. But do they want something that smacks of whatever is the black middle class, or do they just not want bourgeois values, which after all are the basis of this democracy?
Well, I think we have to see what they are saying. I would be the first to agree that integration does not mean giving up everything that has an Afro-American taint, so to speak, a background. I think there are certain unique things within any culture and certain cultural patterns that when you get to the process of amalgamation can really lift the whole culture. And it seems to me that integration at its best is the opportunity to participate in the beauty of diversity. I think the other thing that we've got to see is that these young people are saying that there must be a revolution of values in our country. As Jimmy Baldwin said on one occasion, what advantage is there in being integrated into a burning house? And I feel that there is a need for a revolution of values in America, because some of the values that presently exist are certainly out of line with the values and the idealistic structure that brought our nation into being. Unfortunately, we haven't been true to these ideals. And many of the values of so-called white middle-class society are values that need to be reviewed and re-evaluated, and in a real sense, they need to be changed. So I think the young people in the Negro community who are raising these questions are raising some very profound questions about our total society. In other words, they are saying that there must be a restructuring of the architecture of our society where values are concerned. And with this, I would agree with. So in the quest for integration, I think we can offer our whole nation something, because there are three evils in our nation. It's not only racism, but economic exploitation of poverty would be one, and then militarism. And I think in a sense, and in a very real sense, these three are tied inextricably together, and we aren't going to get rid of one without getting rid of the other.
Well, you stood on the Lincoln Memorial that day in August, 63, and you said, "I had a dream." Did that dream envision that you could see a war in Asia preventing the federal government doing for the Negroes, preventing the society doing for the Negroes, that which you think had to be done?
No, I didn't envision that then. I must confess that that period was a great period of hope for me, and I'm sure for many others all across the nation. Many of the Negroes who had about lost hope saw a solid decade of progress in the South. And in 1954, which was, 64, 1963, 9 years after the Supreme Court's decision to be in the March on Washington, meant a great deal. It was a high moment, a great watershed moment. But I must confess that that dream that I had that day has at many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. But I've had to analyze many things over the last few years, and I would say over the last few months. I've gone through a lot of soul-searching and agonizing moments, and I've come to see that we have many more difficult days ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. And I think the realistic fact is that we still have a long, long way to go, and that we are involved in a war on Asian soil, which, if not checked and stopped, can poison the very soul of our nation.
Dr. King, even if there had not been a war in Asia, would you still not have had this nightmare insofar as the Negro movement for equality then touched on two things that the white community holds sacred, their children and their property?
Oh, I have no doubt that we would have encountered great difficulties, great problems of resistance if the war had not been in existence. So that I'm not going to say that all of our problems would be solved if the war in Vietnam is ended. But I do say that the war makes it infinitely more difficult to deal with these problems. When a nation becomes obsessed with the guns of war, it loses its social perspective, and programs of social uplift suffer. This is just a fact of history, so that we do face many more difficulties as a result of the war. It's much more difficult to really arouse a conscience during a time of war. I noticed the other day, some weeks ago, a Negro was shot down in Chicago, and it was a clear case of police brutality. That was on page 30 of the paper, but on page 1 at the top was 780 Viet Cong killed. That is something about a war like this that makes people insensitive. It dulls the conscience. It strengthens the forces of reaction, and it brings into being bitterness and hatred and violence, and it strengthened the military-industrial complex of our country, and it's made our job much more difficult, because I think we can go along with some programs, if we didn't have this war on our hands, that would cause people to adjust to new developments, just as they did in the South. They said they'd never ride the bus with us, blood would flow in the streets, they wouldn't go to school, and all of these things. But when people came to see that they had to do it because the law insisted, they finally adjusted. And I think white people all over this country will adjust once the nation makes it clear that in schools and housing, we've got to learn to live together as brothers. I think the biggest problem now is that we got our gains over the last 12 years at bargain rate, so to speak. It didn't cost the nation anything. In fact, it helped the economic side of the nation to integrate lunch counters and public accommodations. It didn't cost the nation anything to get the right to vote established. Now we are confronting issues that cannot be solved without costing the nation billions of dollars. Now, I think this is where we're getting our greatest resistance. They may put it on many other things, but we can't get rid of slums and poverty without it costing the nation something.
Be free.
Oh, freedom over me. Oh, freedom. Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. We ain't gonna moan no more, y'all. We just got the plan. He went on to his grave. He said, I won't be a slave. I hope y'all heard Dr. King. That's my teacher, my leader. That's what they don't want the children to hear. And we're going to put it on my website for you to look at it and look at him while he's talking. It's in color. Before I be a slave, that's the position. Be buried. And he is buried. And that's our commitment. Yeah. How many minutes is this song? We'll do one more. Yeah. Yeah. No more, y'all. We got to do something. Can't nobody else lead us. We need leaders like Dr. King. Yeah. Woo! Now, y'all see, my leader wasn't no punk. But they don't want you to hear that. I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. Oh, freedom. Freedom, y'all. Y'all gotta be hungry for freedom. Keep your eyes on the prize. Be hungry for freedom, y'all. Be hungry for freedom. Woo! If you're not hungry for it, you're going to let somebody else direct you. And these folks are not directing us in the right place. Now, understand that I gave you Dr. King's. This is a coffee, tea, and a conversation with me. Dorothy Wright Tillman. Right here, I'm so kind of emotional. And the great WVON 1690, number 7735916090. We're streaming live, www.wvon.com, on iHeartRadio. Take us wherever you go. And we're also on Blog Talk if you miss it. This always get me, and I'm going to put it on my Facebook, and I'll mention to y'all what you have to do. You can look at it and see it in color. Look at Dr. King. Look how he dressed. Our leaders and our people dress. We wouldn't all know. You know, it's something else. We're being led in the wrong direction. Now, I only got like about 10 minutes. And what I want y'all to do is don't try to do a whole speech. Just make your statement so I can. My board is lit up, and I'm going to try to get in as many calls as I can. I have maybe one or two lines open, but I'm finna go now. Don't give me no long speech. Just say something brief. Less is more. Anita, you've been waiting for a whole since 6:30.
Oh, that's okay. Dr. King was a Christian. You know, it's just what they say he did. But he was a Christian, and the Caucasian female and male are not Christian.
Okay, thank you.
Most of.
Thank you. Okay, Maurice?
Good morning, Jordy. So all of Dr. King's work was deep, meaningful, and socially redeeming. Do you remember the phrase, come alive, October 5, Jordy?
That's Mr. Gardner. I call him all the time. I call him. People don't talk about him. I call him once a month. He's still alive.
Well, we're doing an economic campaign. What do you think about the slogan, Bank Black?
We'll talk about it next week because I'm staying right here, Maurice. Come alive October 5. We got to stay right here. Y'all stay on what I'm on. Don't take me off on home. I'm hang up on you. I love you, Maurice. Dabra. Okay. Okay. Dabra.
I just want to say this. It has gotten worse since the 1968 King March for our people. I don't see any form of improvement. And that man died for us to get where.
Well, that's
he
because we're allowing somebody else to lead us. If you notice, Dr. King didn't talk about no equity. And we was talking about equality, and that's what they don't want you to talk about, equality for black folks, because you talk to equity stuff and all this other stuff that you bring everybody else in. Thank you, Darva. Remember the word equality. Okay, who's next? Kirtland. Come on, y'all help me out. Y'all help me out now, because I don't have a lot of time. Kirtland. Hello, Kirtland.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you don't have long. Uh-huh.
My condolences to Liberty and to the Jackson family.
Thank you. I'm going to announce the funeral. I'm going to announce everything on the funeral before I go off the air.
Okay, and I just want to, real quick, I want to let the people know on General Grant, President Grant, look up the Force Acts. It was Grant who crushed the Klan.
That's right.
Didn't rise up again until in the next century.
They rose up under the Democrats. But
right.
Curtin, call me next week and let's talk about this, because we got to stop these folks from tearing down these statues. But Dr. King was deep. Wasn't he deep, Curtin?
No question. And remember when he came here and he went to Chatham.
We also at Liberty. He spoke at Liberty, right?
Nothing but a mink ghetto.
Thank you, you sure did. Dr. King was so deep, y'all. I'm so glad I had an opportunity to sit at the table with this man and to be one of his apostles and also to study under him. I was an apostle, not a disciple. The apostle is much deeper than the disciple. Milton?
Yes, how you doing?
All right, 30 seconds now. We ain't got real long. What you got to say?
By nature, a black man's religion is Hebrew, Buddhist, or Islam.
You better listen to my pastor, because my pastor told you last Jesus was born in Africa, so Christianity is ours too. Okay, I'm trying to go down where I'm going, y'all. Don't be trying to just do what I tell y'all to do, though. I'm going to cut y'all off. Okay, Lee.
Yeah, hi, Dorothy. Tim, hi, Alderman. In 1965, when Dr. King came to Chicago, I was 15, 16 years old. I didn't have much of a grasp on social issues, but my parents held him in very
high regard. Did you live on the West Side?
No, I lived on 48th and Prairie, but particular neighborhood was Dr. King referring to as slums? I often remember. My neighborhood wasn't no slum.
Well, we had to come here in the slum. Folks couldn't go west of the Madison over there. You couldn't go south. You couldn't go north. People was living in cold flats, paint peeling off the wall. Maybe you wasn't, but a whole lot of folks was. We'll talk about that. See, denial. Connie and Costello had all them cold water flats. So it was really terrible. So we were saying that people had a right not to have to be forced to stay in this ghetto. You couldn't go past Pereira that much. Sorry. I'm not going to defend what he said, because what he said was true. Lewis.
Good morning, Ms. Tillman.
Yes.
Thank you for putting our people back on the right track of where their history is. our history is that our people are Negro people. We are the Negro people. Dr. King talked about the Negro issue. He didn't talk about black issues, African-American issues.
He said Afro-American. I understand there's a difference between Afro-American and African-American. If you remember, Malcolm always said Afro-American. And that's a whole other question that we'll talk about later. How's that?
Well, when I think of Afro-American, I think of a culture. When I think of a people, I think of the Negro people, because on my birth certificate and on my father's birth certificate, it was the word Negro. It was African-American.
I got you now. I got you. That was game. Thank you. He's absolutely right. Dr. King talked about Afro-American. And if you listen back and Malcolm, especially when he went on and started his own stuff, when he began him and, you know, when he became Shabazz, he talked about the Afro-American. That's what he talked about. He didn't talk about no African-American. That's a whole other game, y'all, because a white person coming from Africa, he's an African-American. If he was born and raised in Africa, Joe.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right.
That was a good pod you did on Dr. King, but I also want to congratulate you on your granddaughter.
Thank you.
I saw her on Channel 9. Very good. That's our next mayor, next governor, next president.
Well, she's with the Native American today out there with them. She texted me and told me, Mama, don't be calling them on the reservation, Indian reservation, Native American. I said, yes, ma'am. She texted me and corrected me, Joe. Thank you. Even a child can teach you. She taught me very well. Okay. Mike?
Yes, I just want to comment that Dr. King's life ended in at the time of this pursuit about economic progress, and that's where we should continue about the money in action this year.
Okay. Thank you so much. I just got a call. Reverend Jackson, I was talking about Reverend Daryl Jackson from Liberty Baptist Church. Funeral. Not Reverend Jesse Jackson, Reverend Daryl Jackson. Okay, y'all, I'm sorry, and I'm going to give y'all all our updates before I leave. Mama D.
Hallelujah, greetings to you. Integration does not mean giving up your blackness. And instead of making America Mexico again, we need to comprehend that the indigenous Native American and the indigenous Native Black Americans are twin victims of this genocidal holocaust.
Thank you so much. No, I'm telling y'all just, I don't think our community understand, because they don't hear stuff like this about, like Dr. King, what Dr. King is talking about. They don't hear this. By the way, Leaks and Son have Dr. Jack, Pastor Jackson's body, if you want to call over there, because we're supposed to have, they got the body, the viewing is Wednesday. Service for Pastor Jackson is Friday, March 5th at 11 a.m. I don't have, and I don't know exactly when the viewing is of the body to be with the family. Call Leaks and Son's funeral home, but service is at 11 o'clock, March 5th. Emeritus Reverend Daryl Jackson at the Liberty Baptist Church, the church that's a liberator, the church that let Dr. King in, the church that helped God Harold Washington elect, the church that is for the people. Now, look, y'all, I'm down to how many minutes? I'm down to like 7 minutes, y'all, and my whole board is lit up. I got two lines, so y'all got to help me out and be quick. I got to get, Ron, I got to get you in here.
It doesn't cost anything to tear down statues.
That's right.
That doesn't cost anything. okay, but open up the trades, and then lastly, in 10 seconds, yes, certainly the country did not want to see black people dehumanized, didn't want to see a white police officer on George Floyd's neck. But you know what? They still are not committed to equality. But
equality is what it's about, and I know this is equity. They got you on the word equity. I kept telling folks our movement fought for equality for black people, for the Negro people. Now people heard Dr. King, my leader. Y'all can get this on YouTube, y'all, but I'm gonna post it so you can know what it is. You can get a chance to see him and look at him. It's in color. And one thing about our leaders, you didn't see them all nasty. You see them dressed. Look at Dr. King dressed. Even when we marched, we had some kind of a, we believed in ourselves. We got to get these boys' pants up and all the other stuff. Believe in ourselves. Malcolm looked good. You got to look at, we marched and we was dressed up. Because we uplifted, and that's what we did. Patrick from Omaha. Patrick?
Yes, good morning, Sister Tillman, and thank you for playing that segment of Dr. King. You can just hear his intellect, his line of reasoning.
Yeah.
And it's just a breath of fresh air when you compare it to the silly talk that's going on among our people today.
And the only way we're going to make it as a people, Patrick, is to be a critical thinker, to really come together and to do. That's why I focus on, won't you pull us together? I don't have time for all that. I was taught by people like Dr. King, Jane Bevel, Dr. King, Jane Bevel, C.T. Vivian, all of them, Jose.
Yep.
So I don't understand that. And see, you can go to YouTube and find this. I'm going to put it on my Facebook and get a chance to look at him. I let him be an interview, not speak, but interview. Make sure you do.
One thing I want to do, too, I want to read his letter he wrote from a Birmingham jail.
Okay, I got to go now. You can't read it now. I can't read it now. I got to go. Can't read it. I can place it on my thing. Ebony, we're going to place it on my Facebook. If not, they can go to YouTube and look for what, Ebony? Are we going to put a link there? But you can go to YouTube and look up the speech. It was on NBC Color. The first one really he did, because he looked so good. I sat at the table and cried when I was looking at him because I understood. I felt him, and I looked at him, and I knew what was on his mind. Being with Dr. King for so long, you know, some things you don't even have to say when we were walking in fear and working on behalf. But to have looked at him, not speaking, but talking, it was deep for me. And that's all I got to tell y'all. It was deep. Bill.
Thanks, Ms. Tillman. Yeah, Dr. King had three basic objectives, social justice, political justice, and economic improvement for the black man and woman.
Education. Wait, Bill, don't leave education.
I'm not going to leave that out. Now we have more black politicians, black organizations, black professional organizations than ever before. And they seem not to be leaning on those three objectives, social, on a consistent basis. In other words, housing, education, public safety, employment opportunities, and health. Where's the report from each one of these major organizations that's telling us this is our objective as of 2020?
No, they're just getting grants. Are they getting grants or taking care of themselves and playing games? And some of them don't even understand because they're not studying, Bill. We had to read. We had to study. When Dr. King talked about the ghetto, I want y'all to understand. How many minutes I got over there? I think I can't take no more calls, y'all. When Dr. King talked about the ghetto, people said, ghetto is where, did you hang up on Bill? Okay. Bill, I'm sorry. You can listen. Ghetto is where one denomination of We're gonna do reparations. First, I'm gonna do keep your eyes on the prize. You can start at 9. I go to reparations. Ghetto was one denomination of people, Leah, one color, one race of people with one culture. They came from the Oshawash with the Jews, so they called ghetto. So he called Kenneth Clark. He wrote Dark Ghetto. I've asked y'all to read that book. That's one of the books we had to read in the movement. One thing we had to do was read, study, and get our information. I wanted to end that with Dr. King today because I want y'all to understand that we have work to do and we don't have time to play. I don't have time to play. You don't have time to play because we got to fight like our future depends on it, like our lives, and our lives do depend on it. Our lives depend on it because we have our children. Why aren't we fighting for their education? Why are we fighting for our young people to be part of these trades? Why are we writing equity? Equity this, social justice that, and all that stuff. Because you're playing. They made the LGBT thing be part of the civil rights the other day. I'm not trying to stop nobody from being what they are, but we got to do what we got to do here, y'all. We gotta come together and fight like our life depend on it does is for our future. Reverend Jackson, praying for you. Hope you get better. Don't forget that. What happened? That one, Mabel's, huh? That Mabel Staples. That's why it's so long. I wanted Mabel. That's all right. Keep your eyes on the prize. Dorothy Wright Tillman said until next week. Who is that? Hold on, y'all. Keep your eyes on the prize. Yeah, I thought we were going to have Mabel today, but that's all right. Don't forget our emeritus pastor, Daryl Jackson's funeral. It's Friday, March 5th at 11 a.m. I don't have the information for the reviewing at Leek Funeral Home. Call and see. That's the right time until next week, telling y'all, keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Look on YouTube for Dr. King if you want to. It's going to be on my website, but you can find it where he did the NBC website, and it's really good. Till next week, y'all. Dorothy Wright Tillman said, keep your eyes on the prize. Fight for equity. Listen to our leader, like what Dr. King, talking from the grave. Till next week, Dorothy Wright Tillman. I'll see you. We're not ending Black history. We do it every day. We're just ending the month that they celebrate in this country. Till next week, reparations now.
In this slavery industry, is this nation's foundation of economy? What bothers me is the stripping of language, culture, and religion of African descendants with no restriction. They cut children from my queen's guts to inbreed fear in us. My hands rough, my forefather's hands got blisters, forced to be a field hand by another white man. Mr. President, I'm here to represent for mine. And for the Africa in which you raised and left behind, draining her natural resource. So to her people pay remorse or feel the force of a former slave. Kidnapped from my land, locked in chains.
I'm Vanessa Tyler.
And I'm Julius White on the Black Information Network.
Well, we're going to break the doors down. They're already at the doorstep.
The MAGA.